Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad and crazy martinis for conservatives today. We also want to let you know we're sponsored today by Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. Join the conversation. We'll have more on Patriot Mobile a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, I have a feeling we're among the very few who are actually still working today in the Washington, D.C. area. The commute was a breeze. It was almost like a federal holiday. So it's good to know some of us are still at the grindstone here.
I'm out here as soon as we're done with this, Greg.
All right, let's start with the first, unfortunately, of our bad martinis. This is courtesy of Tim Alberta in the National Review. And, Jim, it goes back to, I think, a problem that we saw in the middle part of last decade and one of the reasons, among multiple, that Republicans, after controlling the White House, the House, and the Senate, ultimately surrendered control of the House and Senate in 2006 and then the White House in 2008. Tim reports about, first of all, that Ruel Labrador, remember the House Freedom Caucus, gave about a week after Election Day, and when he was asked about Trump's plan to seek a $1 trillion infrastructure package soon after taking office, Labrador told reporters that any such bill, quote, has to be paid for with spending cuts or revenues from elsewhere, and if Trump doesn't find a way to pay for it, the majority of us, if not all of us, are going to vote against it. Well, we're a few weeks later, and according to several members, and I'm guessing of the Freedom Caucus, there has been informal talk of accepting a bill that's only 50% paid for, with the rest of the borrowing being offset down the road by economic growth. It's an arrangement Republicans would never have endorsed under a President Hillary Clinton, and a slippery slope to go down with Trump. But then he explains why this is happening. Most Freedom Caucus members have little cash in their campaign accounts and are therefore susceptible to primary challenges from better-financed, establishment-backed candidates. He continues, though conservatives believe the president-elect to be an ally, they also recognize his fickle nature, which has been a source of frequent internal conversations. Even if they support Trump 9 times out of 10, voting against him once could trigger a tweet storm or the threat of a visit to their district. It's a chilling thought for members who know that the Republican National Committee, the National Republican Congressional Committee, and the House GOP leadership already want them gone. So, Jim, not only do we have a president who's got the most principled, or at least in the minds of many, some of the most conservative members of his party shaking in their boots over one disagreement over the next 2 or the next 4 years, you've got people ready to compromise on principles that you and I liked and, you know, not adding to debt. This was a good principle to have, and now another Republican is in the White House and they're ready to fudge.
Greg, you and I have had a lot of fun over the last 4 years or more than that of kind of observing every time the Democrats who scream bloody murder over George W. Bush doing something shrug and applaud or are perfectly fine with it when Barack Obama does it. You and I will point out, oh, I guess it's only bad if a Republican does it. Well, Republicans are opening themselves up to a, you know, giant and valid accusations of flaming hypocrisy. If they basically are saying, look, we you know, really held the line on spending on Obama. We really felt the giant spending of the stimulus and Obamacare was totally unacceptable, but we're only going to expect giant spending projects to be paid halfway under Trump. They will deserve every bit of criticism they get for this. It indicates that a lot of that stuff, it's easier to talk about cutting the budget when you don't actually have responsibility for making the numbers add up. That this was an easy pose to have when you were in the minority, much harder to pull off when you're in the majority because spending is usually popular. The quotes in that story by Tim Alberta really point to House Republicans knuckling under and signing off with big spending because Trump is doing it. The indication these guys who were like, oh, remember Tea Party, Greg? We're to the ramparts and
yes,
we're going to stand for what was right and we weren't afraid of anybody. Now, look, Trump might tweet at us. He might hold a rally in our district and not invite us. Look out, you know. Now, the one thing I will observe is that Donald Trump did not really run on fiscal conservatism in 2016. He did a little bit of, you know, lip service to eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse, but really cutting the government spending is not really a big priority for Donald Trump. So he doesn't necessarily have to, or at least if he proposes giant spending projects, he's simply being consistent with what he proposed. But those of us who were wary about Trump this was one of the reasons that the argument, oh, don't worry, the Republicans in Congress will keep him in check. That doesn't look so such like a, you know, ironclad take it to the bank bet right now. And it's a deeply ominous note to begin the Trump presidency on, that we could be heading back to the spending rates of the early Obama years, but it'll be totally different because the Republicans doing it now.
Listen, House Freedom Caucus members, we're going to get, at least I'm going to give you a little bit of advice here. If they hate you anyway, and they're going to go after you anyway, at least go down fighting on principle, not by knuckling under and giving in and hoping they throw you some crumbs come Election Day 2018. Fight for what you believe in. Ultimately, your people will respect for that. And if they don't, at least you can live with your conscience. Good grief.
I say, I remember back in late years of the old Republican Congress, Tom DeLay at one point saying, well, look, we really have cut the budget. There really isn't much more to be cut. Looking at the federal budget of 2006. And, well, you know, of course, every year they, you know, they come out with the pig book, all the examples of pork, all the earmarks that were in there. It was a depressing statement of how Republicans had really given up on the fight of controlling spending, because it didn't seem that bad at that time. Now, were the annual deficits smaller then than they were in the early Obama years? Yeah, sure. But in the end, fiscal conservatism and reducing spending is one of those things that always remains popular in the generic term. But once you get into specifics, people start objecting. It is a harsh reality that I wrote a bit about in the Weed Agency, and nothing that has happened in the intervening years has mitigated that basic fact of political life.
And that's why the Weed Agency is so good, because it weaves real life facts and trends in Washington, actual events that happened over the years in Washington, with the great narrative that Jim weaves through there. So just because it's been out a couple of years doesn't give you an excuse to not have read it. So get out there and get the Weed Agency. Get it for yourself for Christmas.
No excuse for not buying it. If you read it, great, but buying it is important.
That's what's really important. All right, moving on to our second bad martini now, Jim. And once again, we're back to Germany and the aftermath of the Christmas market attack. It looks this morning that they definitely are on the hunt for the right guy here, Anas Amri. His fingerprints are all over the steering wheel. They're all over the door on the driver's side of the truck. Pretty good indication that he's the guy responsible here. Still on the run. As you point out in the lead item in the Morning Jolt today, though, this guy, a Tunisian migrant, was the subject of a terrorism probe in Germany earlier this year and was not deported, even though his asylum bid was rejected. A senior German official said on Wednesday, the suspect, who went by numerous aliases, became the subject, of course, of this national manhunt, €100,000 reward. This is a guy who was also in prison for 4 years due to violent crime in Italy. Jim, what does it take to get kicked out of a country is what you ask in the Jolt today, and it's a good question.
Yeah, it's bad. We kind of knew, and there were various reports of whether Europe really has a clear-eyed view on the potential threat of terrorism. We've been having this argument going back to the early days of the Bush administration. Whether Europe had really done the minimal acceptable level of assimilating and acclimating the new immigrants coming to their shores. The French with Algerians, the Germans with Turks, issues in places like Belgium and the Netherlands, over in the UK, all over the European continent, there were large groups of Muslim immigrants that appeared to be fertile soil for Islamists and radicals to recruit. Now, you bring in more than 1 million refugees in 1 year, have a bigger population of people who may have sympathies towards that. And the description of the record of this guy is thoroughly depressing. We have our own issues of people being on our watch list here in the United States that turned out should have been on the do something about him list. So maybe we can't throw that many stones. But I'm just marveling at this, Greg, because one, the risks with this giant influx of refugees were transparent from the beginning. The German government told people not to worry about it. They said they had this handled. They said they could vet these people, and they did not vet these people. And even in a case like this where they found lots of reasons and they were, you know, he did not qualify to stay, he was still hanging around until he could actually do something terrible and deadly like this. So you don't want to panic people, but there has been a complete dropping of the ball by the part of German security authorities. And on the one hand, considering their national history, you can understand why the German people might be wary about far-reaching state governmental authorities to keep tabs on people and investigate and potentially detain them for crimes against the state. Not pursuing a more aggressive course has consequences, and I think this is one of those consequences. It is hard to see how there'll be anything except a vehement backlash against Angela Merkel, and it deservedly so. And now the question is, how much can you mitigate the damage of this policy in the coming years, and how many terrorists can you stop while you're still trying to get a handle on this situation?
And it's a good lesson for the United States as well, not just with refugees potentially, but also with people who are in the country illegally, overstayed their visas. If they don't belong here, start the process and get them going, because this is how things happen when you get sloppy with removing people who should be removed. So,
you know, to quote the song, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
I can understand why you wouldn't want to go back to Tunisia, but yes, you got to get out of here. But would you switch your phone companies if you knew your current carrier was using your money to promote liberal causes, whether it's making sure that you don't think the refugees could potentially pose any sort of problem, whether vetting is already extreme and you got nothing to worry about because the top people are on it, don't you worry, restricting your Second Amendment rights or promoting abortion through Planned Parenthood? What if there was a liberal phone company targeting conservative candidates and organizations? Would you want to switch to a conservative phone company to help fight against their liberal agenda? The fact is, your carrier right now, they could be using your money to undermine your beliefs. There's also a radical liberal phone company out there spending tens of millions of dollars to defeat conservative leaders and fight for liberal social change. Well, Patriot Mobile is fighting back, and they are taking action.
Patriot Mobile offers nationwide talk and text and high-speed data at competitive prices, and it donates up to 5% of your monthly bill to the conservative organization of your choice. You will get the same quality service, the latest and greatest devices like the Apple 6 and the Galaxy S7, competitive prices, and center-right causes that you believe in. Finally, you have a mobile phone company that believes what you believe.
Patriot Mobile is America's only conservative phone company and was created to fight for conservative causes and defend conservative candidates. Stand with Patriot Mobile and give voice to your conservative values with every call, every text, every status update. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT right now or go to patriotmobile.com/ricochet to sign up. That's 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. Join the conversation. And let's hope conservative doesn't get redefined based on our first martini today. Jim, let's move on to our crazy martini now. And it's kind of the flip side of what we're seeing in Germany, although in some ways it's handling once again with kid gloves issues related to Muslims in the country. Nothing as serious as what we're seeing in Berlin and this guy getting away and not being kicked out before he could do the terrorist attack. But yesterday we got certainly two, and it seems like three hoaxes. Designed to gin up fears that Islamophobia or racism is alive and well in the United States, and all of them seem to be false. Two of them for sure are. Let's start in Michigan. On November 11th, the Detroit Free Press reported that Ann Arbor police are looking for a man who demanded that a University of Michigan student remove her hijab, a headscarf often worn by Muslim women, or be set on fire with a lighter. Now, the update on this story. Investigators conducted witness interviews and reviewed multiple surveillance videos of the area in question. During the course of the investigation, numerous inconsistencies in the statements provided by the alleged victim were identified. Following a thorough investigation, detectives have determined the incident in question did not occur. Then, let's go to Mississippi. November 1st, Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church, a predominantly black congregation, was burned and vandalized, and the vandalism included "Vote Trump" on the brick exterior. Associated Press yesterday. A Mississippi man with a prior criminal record was arrested Wednesday in the burning of an African-American church that was spray-painted with the words "Vote Trump," and the church's bishop said the man is a member of the congregation. The state fire marshal said investigators do not believe the fire was politically motivated, but there are signs it may have been done to appear that way. And then the other one yesterday that still is a little bit up in the air but seems to be a hoax because he's done it so many different times. This YouTube character, Adam Saleh, on a plane with a friend of his that he refers to as Slim, says they were kicked off a flight from Heathrow in London to the United States because they were speaking in Arabic. The Delta Airlines statement says that they were shouting, and any sort of disruption along those lines usually results in people getting kicked off regardless of language. other passengers are also disputing Soleil's account, and he has done this multiple times before and admitted that some of these others have been hoaxes. So, Jim, I'm not sure who they think they're helping with these things. The media does an amazing job of reporting the allegations and not so much the aftermath, although these seem to have gotten out there. What do you make of all this?
I don't know about you, Greg. I have reached the point where I don't want to reflexively distrust every claim of a hate crime that I hear, but we're starting to reach that point. So the first thing I kind of would let every listeners know, I don't know about you, I don't believe any story about the "you won't believe what they wrote on my receipt."
Right.
Rockets around social media. And sometimes it's the, you know, generous man picks up the check for single mom with five kids or something, you know, some sort of real. The inspirational ones, okay, I'm going to choose to believe those are true. When you hear these stories about they wrote something nasty and homophobic or a racial slur on my check or something like that, for starters, I have a hard time getting the check at the restaurant to begin with. Right. The most amazing thing of these stories, my first clue that it's a hoax is they had a response from their server. The second thing is just this sense of they're going to take the time and they're going to write something really nasty or terribly offensive. We in a world of these sorts of things going viral on social media, like, oh, I really don't like that person. Let me write a racial slur on their receipt and then expect them to pay, by the way. Right. Somebody wants to get paid for service. Let's see if they leave a large tip. Right. You know. I'm not saying this has never happened. I'm just really, really wary when you hear these sorts of stories. The second thing is, did you file a police report? Because when somebody says they're a victim of a terrible crime and something awful happened to them and everyone in the world should know about it and it's very serious and reflects this giant problem in society that's much more far-reaching than anybody thought and it's time to raise awareness, but they refuse to file a police report, that is a giant red flag. Why would they want to not do it? Oh, because they don't want to make a big deal out of it. Wait a minute. You just turned this into this giant viral social media sensation. I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but I'm holding a press conference. No. It doesn't work that way, right? If you're really a victim of a crime, you would presumably be fine with filing a police report. Now, the reason people may not want to do that is because most people know filing a false police report is a crime in and of itself. And they kind of recognize that they're assuming the risk of criminal trouble if their hoax turns out to be the case. And then the third one, I suppose places like Brandeis or Berkeley or these college campuses could have large numbers of neo-Nazis and Klan members and virulently horrible race. It's possible. It's conceivable. But I tend to doubt it. And so when the person who is the activist against everything is the victim of the Nazi swastika or the N-word or something like, or a noose is left hanging on their doorknob or something like that, it always seems a little too perfect and a little too convenient that the person who would ordinarily be most inclined to make the biggest stink about this has this happen to them. Is it possible somebody targeted them for that kind of harassment? Yeah, it's possible. But we've just seen so many cases in which there are hoaxes and hate crimes that I think a little wariness is worthy, and it's terrible. These hoaxes are terrible because in some cases, someday somebody somewhere is genuinely going to be the victim of a hate crime, and we should you want to respond to that person with sympathy and understanding and to console them, but in the back of your mind you start wondering whether you're being manipulated. So every one of these people who files a false police report should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And I think people in the media need to be a little more wary about these reports. You can't just point to a Facebook post and throw it up there on the site. You can't just, you should call up the individual. You should call up the local police. Is there a police report filed? Does anything in this story not make sense? I think the single greatest example of this, and it's a slightly different breed of cat than what we're talking about here, Greg. How many listeners recognize the name Morton Downey Jr.?
I do.
All right, a departed talk show host who was active in, I guess, the late 80s and kind of known as a controversy.
Shock jock.
Shock jock, exactly. A fantastic performance, more or less playing himself in the cinematic classic Predator 2. but basically, at one point, his career started going on the downswing. People got tired of him. And he said that he was assaulted, I believe, in the San Francisco airport bathroom by neo-Nazis. Because that's where neo-Nazis hang out, Greg, is the San Francisco airport. And he comes out and he said that they had attacked him and they carved a swastika in his forehead. Except the swastika was backwards. Almost as if you were doing it to yourself in a mirror. And lo and behold, he later admitted that he had made it all up and done it to himself, and was a kind of a sad example of how far people go to get attention and get media coverage and things like that. Not everyone in this world is as twisted as Morton Downey Jr., but I think the media has got to exercise a little bit more skeptical for, at the very least, before writing the detailed think pieces. Because you notice we're already seeing, Greg, stories like, well, look, regardless of the specifics in this case, like whether it's true or not, which seems like a pretty important specific, as right. I make air quotes as I say that. But look, even if this case isn't true, the issue of flying while Arab is very serious, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to say this is why Trump won, but the eagerness of people to, when reality does not fit the narrative, some truly deranged activists will attack themselves so that reality fits their own narrative, instead of acknowledging that, hey, maybe racism and terrible behavior is rarer than they think.
The only police report of the stories that I have here is the one in Ann Arbor, and she could face charges for filing a false police report. I don't know what the law is in that area, but I'd also give her a nice hefty bill for the cost of the entire investigation.
Because well, that's the thing. The idea of, oh, haven't they suffered enough? No.
They created the suffering.
If it's a $50 fine, then hit him with the full $50 fine, right? I'm not saying you necessarily need to come down on these people like a ton of bricks, but you need to create enough of a deterrent that people don't feel, you know, that the people who are tempted to try to get attention in this way won't do so. And they'll recognize that if they do so, they assume the risk of criminal prosecution.
Merry Christmas, everyone. What a way
this
to
white man who came down my chimney and, you know, right. left a bunch of stuff I didn't want to encourage consumerism.
Oh, get ready for those. Jim, we will actually be here tomorrow with a brand new edition. So I'll talk to you then.
I will see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at Patriot Mobile. That's 1-800-A-PATRIOT by phone or patriotmobile.com/ricochet. Patriot Mobile, the conservative choice for mobile phone service. Join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.